$1,000, and Piedmont held that. Lisa was so opposed to debt that their own little balance sheet was remarkably clean. Car loan of about $20,000, he said. Maybe $1,000 or so on the credit cards. Not much, really. Richard nodded his approval and never took his eyes off the monitor. When his fingers left the keyboard, he shrugged and turned into the generous banker. We could do $3,000 on a signature, 6% interest for 12 months. Since he'd never borrowed with no collateral, Neil wasn't sure what to expect. He had no idea what his signature would command, but somehow $3,000 sounded about right. Can you go $4,000? He asked. Another frown, another hard study of the monitor, then it revealed the answer. Sure, why not? I know where to find you, don't I? Good. I'll keep you posted on the stock. Is this a hot tip, something on the inside? Give me a month. If the price goes up, I'll come back and brag a little. Fair enough. Richard was opening a drawer, looking for forms. Neil said, Look, Richard, this is just between us boys, okay? Know what I mean? Lisa won't be signing the papers. No problem, the banker said, the epitome of discretion. My wife doesn't know half of what I do on the financial end. Women just don't understand. You got it. And along those lines, would it be possible to get the funds in cash? A pause, a puzzled look. But then anything was possible at Piedmont National. Sure, give me an hour or so. I need to run to the office and sue a guy, okay? I'll be back around noon to sign everything and get the money. Neil hustled to his office 2 blocks away with a nervous pain in his stomach. Lisa would kill him if she found out, and in a small town, secrets were hard to bury. In 4 years of a very happy marriage, they had made all decisions together. Explaining the loan would be painful, though she would probably come around if he told the truth. Repaying the money would pose a challenge. His father had always been one to make easy promises. Sometimes he came through, sometimes he didn't, and he was never too concerned one way or the other. But that was the old Joel Backman. The new one was a desperate man with no friends, no one to trust. What the hell? It was only $4,000. Richard would keep it quiet. Neil would worry about the loan later. He was, after all, a lawyer. He could squeeze in some extra fees here and there, put in a few more hours. His primary concern at that moment was the package to be shipped to Rudolf Viscovich. With the cash bulging in his pocket, Neil fled Culpeper during the lunch hour and hurried up to Alexandria, 90 minutes away. He found the store Chatter in a small strip mall on Russell Road, a mile or so from the Potomac River. It advertised itself online as the place to go for the latest in telecom gadgetry and one of the few places in the United States where one could purchase unlocked cell phones that would work in Europe. As he browsed for a few moments, he was astounded at the selection of phones, pagers, computers, satellite phones, everything one could possibly need to keep in touch. He couldn't browse for long. There was a 4 o'clock deposition in his office. Lisa would be making one of her many daily check-ins to see what, if anything, was happening downtown. He asked a clerk to show him the Onkyo 850 PC pocket smartphone, the greatest technological marvel to hit the market in the past 90 days. The clerk removed it from a display case and with great enthusiasm switched languages and described it as full QWERTY keyboard, tri-band operation on 5 continents, 80 megabyte built-in memory, high-speed data connectivity with EGPRS, wireless LAN access, Bluetooth wireless technology, IPv4 and IPv6 dual-stack support, infrared, pop port interface, Symbian operating system version 7.0S, Series 80 platform. Automatic switching between bands? Yes. Covered by European networks? Of course. The smartphone was slightly larger than a typical business phone, but it was comfortable in the hand. It had a smooth metallic surface with a rough plastic back cover that prevented sliding when in use. It's larger, the clerk was saying, but it's packed with goodies. Email, multimedia messaging, camera, video player, complete word processing, internet browsing, and complete wireless access almost anywhere in the world. Where are you going with it? Italy? It's ready to go. You'll just need to open an account with a service provider. Opening an account meant paperwork. Paperwork meant leaving a trail, something Neil was determined not to do. What about a prepaid SIM card, he asked. We got them. For Italy, it's called a TIM, Telecom Italia Mobile. It's the largest provider in Italy, covers about 95% of the country. I'll take it. Neil slid down the lower part of the cover to reveal a full keypad. The clerk explained, it's best to hold it with both hands and type with the thumbs. You can't fit all 10 fingers on the keypad. He took it from Neil and demonstrated the preferred method of thumb typing. Got it, Neil said. I'll take it. The price was $925 plus tax, plus another $89 for the TIM card. Neil paid in cash as he simultaneously declined the extended warranty, rebate registration, owner's program, anything that would create paperwork and leave a trail. The clerk asked for his name and address, and Neil declined. At one point he said with great irritation, "Is it possible to simply pay for this and leave?" "Well, sure, I guess," the clerk said. "Then let's do it. I'm in a hurry." He left and drove half a mile to a large office supply store. He quickly found a Hewlett-Packard tablet PC with integrated wireless capability. Another $440 got invested in his father's security, though Neil would keep the laptop and hide it in his office. Using a map he had downloaded, he found the package post in another strip mall nearby. Inside at a shipping desk, he hurriedly wrote 2 pages of instructions for his father, then folded them into an envelope containing a letter and more instructions he'd prepared earlier that morning. When he was certain no one was watching, he wedged 20 $100 bills in the small black carrying case that came with the Onkyo Marvel. Then he placed the letter and the instructions, the smartphone, and the case inside a mailing carton from the store. He sealed it tightly, and on the outside he wrote with a black marker, "Please hold for Marco Lazzari." The carton was then placed inside another, slightly larger one, that was addressed to Rudolf Viscovich at Via Zamboni 22, Bologna. The return address was Package Post, 8851 Braddock Road, Alexandria, Virginia, 22302. Because he had no choice, he left his name, address, and phone number on the registry in case the package got returned. The clerk weighed the package and asked about insurance. Neil declined and prevented more paperwork. The clerk added the international stamps and finally said, "Total is $18.20. Neil paid him and was assured again that it would be mailed that afternoon. Chapter 19. In the semi-darkness of his small apartment, Marco went through his early morning routine with his usual efficiency. Except for prison, when he had little choice and no motivation to hit the ground running, he had never been one to linger after waking. There was too much to do, too much to see. He had often arrived at his office before 6 a.m., breathing fire and looking for the day's first brawl, and often after only 3 or 4 hours of sleep. Those habits were returning now. He wasn't attacking each day, wasn't looking for a fight, but there were other challenges. He showered in less than 3 minutes, another old habit that was aided mightily on Via Fondazza by a severe shortage of warm water. Over the lavatory, he shaved and worked carefully around the quite handsome growth he was cultivating on his face. The mustache was almost complete. The chin was solid gray. He looked nothing like Joel Backman, nor did he sound like him. He was training himself to speak much slower and in a softer voice. And of course he was doing so in another language. His quick morning routine included a little espionage. Beside his bed was a chest of drawers where he kept his things. 4 drawers all the same size, with the last one 6 inches above the floor. He took a very thin strand of white thread he had unraveled from a bedsheet, the same thread he used every day. He licked both ends, leaving as much saliva as possible, then stuck one end under the bottom of the last drawer. The other end was stuck to the side brace of the chest. so that when the drawer was opened,